Welcome to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. I'm Cheryl, and I invite you to join me on my quest to find out, why are people homeschooling? How do you do it? How does it differ from region to region? And should I homeschool my kids? Stick with me as I interview homeschooling families across the country to unfold the answers to each of these questions week by week. Welcome. With us today, we have Amberlee Rich. Amberlee, how are you?
I'm doing really good.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Why don't we start out by, what state are you in, actually? I forget.
I'm in Idaho.
Idaho. Okay. Which, yeah, mountain time is something I've never had to deal with before, and I've been learning a lot. Like, sometimes they observe the daylight savings. Sometimes some states do, some states don't.
Yeah, Arizona is the one that's like really funky.
Okay. All right. Good to know that it's just Arizona.
So we're mountain time.
Perfect. So how many kids do you have and what are their ages?
I have two kids, a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old.
Oh, that's fun. And are you homeschooling them now?
Yes, I do homeschool them.
And what got you into the homeschool world?
Well, I actually never planned on ever being a homeschooling parent. I have a teaching degree and I taught in the public school system and I taught middle school. And at that point, I was like, I don't want my kids ever to go to this school. And then we moved because of a lot of different things. And I did tons of research on all of the school options for our daughter. And I interviewed them. Like, I had a spreadsheet. I was super organized. I had the same questions and I had it all just like really nailed down. And we just had a bad experience in a charter school. And then COVID hit. And then they're like, the last 8 weeks of school was all remote and just wasn't a good fit. So we pulled her out for that. And then the following year was her first grade year. And still all the COVID things. And we went with a magnet school, which is part of the public school system, but it was an arts-based school and you had to apply for it. It was a lottery. And so I was excited that she got into this lottery and she got into the school that I've like had met with the principal and all the things. And it was just another really bad experience, like even way worse with bullying and just different things of just not feeling like she was safe dropping her off, which is never something I ever thought I'd have to deal with as a parent. Like she was getting punched at school and I found out from her and not from her teacher or the principal. And like they knew about it and they didn't actually contact me, which it was by a boy and he had a criminal record like already at 7. It was pretty crazy. And then at that point I started feeling like I should homeschool. And it was like a couple months into my daughter's first grade year. And my husband wasn't completely on board. And he's like, well, we already pulled her out. And there's just so many different shifts. And like, with all the things that were going on with COVID anyways, it was just a lot. And so we waited and I was praying. I'm like, God, if I'm not supposed to homeschool, take this desire away from me. Cause I never desired it to begin with. And my desire just grew and grew to homeschool. And then in December, our daughter was diagnosed with Miss C, which is a complication. It's really rare for kids who were exposed to COVID and they only get that the symptoms like 4 to 7 weeks after they've had COVID. And so it's really funky. And so she was hospitalized and had an infusion all over Christmas. So 5 days and it's all the internal organs start to just get a lot larger and get inflamed. And it was super duper scary. Like some kids don't make it. And then the protocol afterwards, she pretty much had to be in isolation for 10 to 12 weeks with all the medications that she was on. And so we were just at the point of like, it sounds like it's God's telling us to go and homeschool. And so we pulled her from school and have been homeschooling ever since.
Wow. That's pretty dramatic. I hadn't heard of that. What did you call?
Miss C.
Miss C.
Yeah. So there's Miss A for adults and it's multiple inflammatory system for children. Like is it the C is for children?
Can you get it from other things besides COVID too?
No. And so the scary thing is that they didn't know how to deal with it because it's a completely new disease. And so they were trying to figure out what would actually work. And she wasn't one of the first people, which was nice that she wasn't as much of a guinea pig, but it's still, there's like, we go to the cardiologist every year as a checkup because they don't know what the long-term effects will be.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So I can understand where you were like, okay, let's just take our babies and keep them home and safe with us.
Yes.
How has the homeschooling been going? Like, does your daughter say that she misses school? Is she happy to be home?
She's really happy to be home. And I think the only thing she kind of misses is the school bus. but that, yeah, I mean, it's been really good. We do a lot of field trips. There's just more time for them to be kids, that they can play and be. And even though, like, I have a teaching degree and I'm not teaching full time anymore, but I am teaching my kids, like, I do feel like I'm able to use a lot of those tools and being much more customized. I think one thing I noticed with our daughter in school is that just the different ways that they taught, even just reading, and how it was more whole words instead of, it was just pretty much memorization and not doing the phonics. And I feel like there's just so many missing pieces that she just experienced. And I, you know, could it be also because of switching to different schools and then also COVID? Like, there's a lot of different factors, but I feel like I've been able to help connect all those missing pieces and really give her a better education. And I've loved it. I feel like I can really be with my kids and we are able to travel and do the things that we've really wanted to do. And it's freed us up to just have more family time and be intentional.
Did you work full time? Did you quit your job to stay home with them and homeschool?
No, at that point, so I was teaching some art lessons from our home. And no, so I wasn't working full time at that point. And so that wasn't as big of a step because of
yeah,
that.
Yeah. But I mean, it's still, mm-hmm. you know, you could have at any time, you know, taken an opportunity or whatnot. And I'm sure it does help having the teaching background because one, just to pick what kind of curriculum you as an educator have the background to know what to look for, like what do kids need, what did my students work well with, or what was just kind of a waste of time, whereas someone like myself, and I know a lot of other parents out there, when the curriculum, I don't want to say debate, but you know, is anywhere from here is a Becca, which was from a private school somewhere, mm-hmm. the top of the line, through the, you know, the good and the beautiful, the spiraling, ready, go. I know there's like a better word for it, but I don't know.
No, you're good.
All set for you all the way to unschooling where you don't need curriculum because your kids just need to play. Just take them to the library and read and none of it's wrong. So that's mm-hmm. the thing. It's like none of it is like this is what you're supposed to do because kids are so different and parents are so different. So I started with my son, but I wanted to make sure I got the phonics in. And I think it's only because I'm like, grew up in the 80s and 90s where it was like hooked on phonics. I was like, mm-hmm. if it's still around today, it must be good. So.
Well, one of the things that I've been doing because my son has dyslexia and we've been doing the curriculum all about reading and it uses the Orton-Gilliam method. And that has been really helpful. And for, you know, like you're saying, it helps to be a teacher, but in reality, like I have background teaching middle school and high school. I have not taught any kid to read beside my own. And I think there's maybe the perception that it'll be a whole lot easier being a teacher going into homeschooling, but the way you homeschool your kids is so different than you teach a classroom.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of times people's perception is that you do school at home, but really it doesn't look like regular school. And so, yeah, I feel like it's definitely made me grow and have to do a lot more research on what should I be teaching a kindergartner, a first grader, now I'm going to be teaching a fourth grader. Because I haven't taught that. But, you know, we're all equipped. I feel like we know our kids and the quality of education my kids are getting, because I know where they're at and I'm able to help them move forward. It's just so much, it's reassuring. Like, I feel like a lot of times you feel like there's just so much, like you're supposed to teach them the entire everything, which is an impossible thing to do that. Like, that there's so much pressure that we feel as homeschooling parents, but I think we need to let go. Like, there's so much wasted time in a regular traditional classroom. And
you can say that with knowledge, because you were doing that. You were in a classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when I say it, it doesn't hold as much power or validity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just the classroom management side, like if you don't have your classroom management down, like if a teacher doesn't have that figured out and dialed in, none of the kids are going to be learning. And there are a lot of teachers that the classroom management is just not there. That makes it hard for other kids to learn. And that's the nice thing about homeschooling, is that you're able to just help them where they're at. And, you know, there's not another kid distracting unless it's your own child.
Yeah. I also am using the All About Reading for the literacy, and then added on, because I had from episode 4, Katie Berry from Woodbury Academy. She works in curriculum, and she had recommended the Hagerty Phonics. So I'm doing the All About Reading with this Hagerty Phonics teacher manual. So I don't know, we've only done 2 days at the time of this recording, but I'm like, it says it's supposed to take 10 minutes each one. So I'm like, 20 minutes. Sure. It was 3 hours. A lot of like, okay, you've got to listen or else we're going to have to go to school and learn this in a classroom. But then it's like, well, you don't want to put a negative connotation around school, because he has friends and family that are in school. And it's, you know, it's not a bad thing. It's just not what I'm choosing to do with him this year. But if down the line he does go to school, I don't want him to think that's, you know, a bad thing either. But anyways, and then you're like bribing, and then you're like, all right, does he need to know this? But if already on day two we're behind and we, you know, then it's like we're never going to get through it at all. So it's been like doable, but and I'm trying to tell myself it will get better. He's got to get used to this. I've got to get used to this. And we're not always going to be doing it in this way. Like as we get more comfortable with how to go through the books, we'll get more comfortable with each other, with what we're expecting of each other. We can do it in different places, you know, the trampoline or a treehouse. It can look different. It's not always going to look like the first and second day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would totally recommend, like, if it gets to the point where you feel like you need a bribe, it's just, let's take a little break and come back to it. Because I think especially for little boys, like giving them some wiggle time and then coming back to it and doing it outside, and there's just so many different ways that you can engage them, and breaking it up is really helpful. I mean, they do recesses in regular school to break up the learning, so that way they can actually be able to be fully present.
Yeah, I think, one, you're right, with the boys, it's a little bit, they're going.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but with something that's 10 minutes, I mean, to break it up, that's like kind of hard. So just because it's like, it's only 10 minutes, so let's just get it done. But you're right. Maybe to start, we need to maybe do it outside. Here, play, you know, you can rip grass out of the ground with your hands as long as you're listening to me and, you know, repeating what I need you to repeat or stuff like that. So he does like the Ziggy the Zebra a lot. So,
and you can do something, but like he could be on the trampoline beforehand. So I would pay attention to what's before and after it.
Oh.
And then that way, that will, like, if he's getting some energy out, then it'll be easier to have some clarity for him while teaching. So that's what I would try.
Getting the energy out beforehand. Yeah, because we were just kind of jumping into it after we wake up, eat breakfast, and go. But maybe for someone that has a lot of energy, yeah, getting that energy out first. Mm-hmm. That's really good. So you're homeschooling with your 9-year-old, and then you just started with the 6-year-old. How did that work? One, when before your youngest was actually partaking in stuff, what did you do with her, or how did you occupy her, and how is it working with both of them learning now?
It's been good. I think one of the issues I dealt with early on was trying to teach some of the things at the, like, for both of them, and their levels are not the same. So I felt like I was making it too easy for my daughter and too hard for my son, and it was like, this is not actually working.
So I said you had two girls. I'm sorry. I apologize.
You're totally fine. So that was one of the, I think, my biggest aha moments. I also realized that I was pushing too much of trying to get through the book or, like, get all these things done, and I didn't need to do that. And so, yeah, I felt like it's been good. I think it's also figuring out how to work it together. And so a lot of times I'll be doing more one-on-one with my son, and my daughter will do some of her schoolwork that she can do independently, and then we just swap. And so it just, one person's working with me for their really individualized time, which is normally focusing on reading or math. And then they're doing, like, their handwriting or some other things in between. And so I feel like they're both getting schoolwork done, but I'm able to spend more one-on-one time in helping them with where they need to be.
What do you do on days that they're just not feeling it or being uncooperative or fighting with each other? How do you deal?
I do a read aloud. I read aloud a lot, and I feel like reading is the remedy. And it has made it so much better. And, like, they're learning so much just through reading. And I get a lot of the books from, I get a ton of books from the library, but a lot on history that are just picture books, and the language is so good. And so I do a lot of that, and books on science and animals and different things. And so I just read aloud, or we'll read, like, we've finished the Little House on the Prairie series. I think we've done it like 6 times now, and we love it. And so we'll just, I think reading has made it a lot easier. Everyone just calms down. And one of the things I had at the beginning was viewing that when it's reading time, it's like I need to be snuggling with them and reading, and just they can't be doing anything, which I think was just kind of my idealized view in my head. But in reality,
this is what homeschoolers do. You will cuddle with me.
I know, right?
This is what they all do on Instagram, okay? Get over here.
Especially The Read Aloud Family by Sarah McKenzie. I was really inspired that she has read aloud time, but, like, some of her kids are knitting and some of them are drawing and some of them are playing with their cars, and they're all doing it at the same time.
Okay, have you checked out episode 21 with Lindsay, creator of Treehouse Schoolhouse? I asked Lindsay on the show because I fell in love with her Instagram page. She is like the homeschool family I strive to be. Lindsay was homeschooling even before she had kids, homeschooling as a nanny right out of college. Over the years, she has developed super creative ways to help kids learn that can be fun for the whole family. From products like her morning time and daily rhythm and her nature studies to alphabet cards, her Rooted Family Bible curriculum, which is coming out soon, and a connected Christmas, which is right around the corner, hint, hint. And what is a connected Christmas, you ask? Well, it's an invitation to gather your family and celebrate beauty and delight through festive carols, stories, poetry, art, baking, and handcrafts. It's about family, and it's about connecting hearts to the heart of Christmas. From preschool to middle school, there are variations and activities for all ages to celebrate together. Let them know I sent you by using the link treehouseschoolhouse.com/thehomeschoolhowtopodcast, and you can get 10% off all products. You can use the link and code in my show's description.
I've been doing that I'll have, like, they can do some drawing, my son will play with kinetic sand, and I'll be reading, and they're still paying attention. And I was noticing too is that my husband and I will eat so much faster at the dinner table, like at lunch time, and then my kids just take forever. And I was getting frustrated with that, and I started to think, how can I use this time? And so I brought books. And so while the kids were finishing their lunch, I would read to them like 1 or 2 different books. And I'm like, this is getting some schooling done, and they're eating their food, and I'm now not getting frustrated about it. So I think reading, at least in our family, has been a huge way to just get everyone on the same page. Like, everyone enjoys it, and it's something that's really positive, and it is educational.
Do you get your books from any specific book list? Like, especially the history and the science that you were talking about?
No. There's a library nearby. I go to several of them, but one has, it's just called Days of the Past, and it will go through, like, Amelia Earhart's story, and they'll have just a lot of different famous historical figures, or they'll have, I don't know, like we read a book about the Panama Canal, like all different things, how the alphabet was, you know, how they created the alphabet in the first place, like just all kinds of different things. And so it's it's been really fun. So I just go through that section and I pretty much get any of the books that we've never gotten before. Wow. And then, yeah, our library delivers to our doorstep, which is amazing. And so that's one of the things that feels like Christmas, that we typically get 1 to 2 packages a week of books that just show up on our door because we can just do it online and they just deliver. So we never know exactly what book is going to be showing up.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And we also use the Read Aloud Revival book list for some of the things. I typically lean towards the classics because there's just so much stuff that you just don't really know what is in it. And like we did all the E.B. White books, which was really fun. We weren't huge fans of Stuart Little, but just pretty much, yeah, classics, and also feeling okay to reread books like the Little House on the Prairie books that, you know, our daughter has loved them and we've loved reading them. And at first I was like, why are we rereading this so many times? But she knows them so well and she's reading them on her own, which, like, she's been doing that for about 2 years now, which was really good. And so I feel like it's bringing her to have more interest in it. And she's making recipes based off of the Little House books. And we've been making Johnny cakes, which has been interesting.
That's so cute. I don't have much experience with Little House on the Prairie, especially coming from Schenectady, New York, but I'm excited to read it. And what we are reading now from the Read Aloud Revival is the Winnie the Pooh, the original.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a bunch of those books. I don't think I realized that they were like chapter books.
Yes.
Very few pictures. But, you know, even with my 4-year-old, it's fun to read. And I don't even think he knew who Pooh was. So when he didn't like it at first, but when my husband was like, oh my goodness, you're reading Winnie the Pooh. I used to watch that on TV when I was younger, and maybe we can find on YouTube one of the originals. And so I think hearing, oh, Dad watched this, then he started getting a little bit more interested in it. And then knowing that it's like a chapter book that we'll read one little chapter at a time. So it's like reading a small book. And now that we're almost through the first book, he definitely has more of an interest, and it's just so beautifully written, like, just the little things that how the writer presents things that that doesn't happen in a lot of the books today that I've read. And then the other one is the Beverly Cleary series. This book about a little boy digging a hole, and he's like, oh, he loves this book. He wants it read to him every day. And yeah, because that's what he likes to do. So I've been really happy with the Read Aloud Revival list. And it's so funny because when I bring it up to people, they're like, yeah, like, of course. Of course, we know Read Aloud Revival. I'm like, well, yeah. I don't know. I'm new to the homeschooling world. I'm new to library world. I didn't grow up like this, people. But so you have right now in the world, it's so dynamic because you have people that were like, we were always going to homeschool. Like, that's always been the plan. And now these new homeschoolers after COVID are coming into the scene, and we're probably very annoying. So I apologize. I'm sure most of the originals are not listening to my podcast, but I do apologize. I realize how annoying I've been in the past to that group of people, especially when, you know, they have established co-ops and playgroups, and then like we bebop in, like, you know, asking them a million questions, but hopefully we're not too annoying. But it is so interesting when you see this whole dynamic, and like those were the people who were like the original, like, we never used, you know, pesticides on our food and we've always eaten organic, and, you know, and then I think a lot of us have just seen over the last couple of years, like, wow, the government isn't making sure we're all safe and protected, and we have to actually, like, be parents and read labels and, like, find out the history of things. It's how, like, did your eyes open up a little more to that, or were you seeing this in the school? Like, obviously you must have dealt with like just the funding of things alone and how you have to teach to tests versus teaching to students' abilities and then letting them thrive where they thrive.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see like the funding part. I taught art and I had think it was like less than a dollar of funding per student for a trimester of their schooling. It's like, how are you supposed to be able to do anything with this? I had to go out on my own and get donations from different companies. And yeah, it was definitely a challenge. And I feel like homeschooling has opened my eyes to see that there are so many people homeschooling now. I feel like when I was growing up, it was not a thing. I mean, I knew a few people and that was pretty much it. But I feel like the way that the world is going, the way that the schools are going, even from when I stopped teaching, things have changed drastically. And the things that are being taught and pushed to our kids is scary. And I found out one of the days that our daughter was sick at from going to regular school, they had a whole anti-drug thing for first grade, and they were talking to them about all the different types of drugs. And I was just thinking, like, my kids don't even know what drugs are. Like, why do we need to be telling these first grade kids not to do it when, like, now they're like, what are these things? And I feel like that's a conversation that parents should have, not at having their 6-year-old come home from school and be like, what are drugs? And like, we learn about this at school. Like, there's just, I know there's different agendas out there.
Yeah. And it's twofold, because I can see that if a child grows up with older siblings or cousins or even parents that do drugs, maybe they're trying to get to them to say, this isn't good for you to do. They want to influence the children. That, I mean, that's my wholesome like thought process on it. But yeah, you're right. If my son has no experience with drugs, him going to school next year and be like, what? Like, well, now you've piqued my interest.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they're 12, it's going to peak again. And 15, it's really going to peak. And then drugs aren't even like drugs anymore. It's not like, you know, it's all laced with stuff. So what are, if you feel comfortable talking about it, some of the other things that you kind of saw? And well, I mean, if you taught art, you probably weren't too, it wasn't in your face, but were there things that made you say, whoa, my kids aren't going here, like you had mentioned in the beginning?
Well, I feel like with teaching art, I was able to see the inside life of a lot of people. Like, you know, when you're in a math class, your math problems do not depict what's going on in your life. I worked very heavily with the counselor at school because I could see a lot of different issues that kids would have, because their artwork would, it would leak out into their work.
Oh, wow.
And so I was able to have a lot of different conversations through that, and seeing different things. Like, I don't know, there were kids that were like stabbing themselves in their legs doing that at, like, just because it's hidden. And there's lots of like, it's just really sad situations that a lot of kids deal with, and they don't know how to handle it. And yeah.
So just earlier today, I was talking to like an extended family member because her son had talked about wanting to homeschool if he has kids someday. And I said, oh, that's really cool. And she goes, well, I don't know. I don't think so. And she said, I get it that some parents want to do that, but if this gets too out of control and everybody homeschools, there are people that just shouldn't be homeschooling. And I'm like, still kind of thinking about that in my head. And, you know, in a way I'm like, well, yeah, but those are the people that probably shouldn't have kids either. You know, if you shouldn't be home, if your kids shouldn't be home with you between 7 and 3, they probably shouldn't be home with you at all. But, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Because when you have these children who clearly need an outlet, being at home homeschooled, maybe that isn't the best option for them. I mean, they're already here, so we can't say they shouldn't, those parents shouldn't be parents. Like, the kids are here. So what do you think, for some kids being in a public school or whatever school, that is the better place for them, where they have an art class to get some of their emotions out?
I think so. I mean, I remember clearly one of my students that it was parent-teacher conference, and he stayed the entire time hoping his parents would show up, and they never showed up. And he was there for over 2 hours, just like hoping his parents would come and support him and talk to his teachers and see what was going on in his school life. And that wasn't happening. And I also had a student that came in who was homeschooled, and the parents really just neglected him. Like he was going into sixth grade. He couldn't read. It was just like he was traumatized by you have the alarms that go off for like the fire drill and doing that test. And like, he was so freaked out. And a lot of it was just the parents really just dropped the ball, and they were just busy and they hadn't really taught him in like 2 years, and he was just home. So I do feel like homeschooling isn't for everyone. Yeah. And I think, you know, it depends on, you know, what you really want to do with your kids. And like, I see all the time on social media, these parents who just can't wait for their kids to, like, their kids are annoying. Like, if you're that kind of parent, then probably homeschooling your kid is not the right answer for you. And, you know, a lot of parents, they need two incomes going in. Like, I'm a financial coach, and I'm able to see a lot of this firsthand on the other side, I guess. And the nice thing I've enjoyed with homeschooling is that I still am able to have a career, and I'm able to also teach my kids. And so I think, you know, homeschooling does give you flexibility. And so there are parents that are both working, and I feel like homeschooling is definitely shifting. And one of the things I was also thinking from what you said earlier is like, what if everyone homeschooled? And I was just thinking, like, in the area I live in right now, the schools are full. And they're bursting at the seams. And what if people were not homeschooling? These schools would have absolutely no way to house them. There would not be enough teachers. And so on the flip side, homeschooling is actually helping these schools to be able to thrive and have smaller classroom sizes.
You're right about that. And it doesn't seem like the classrooms are any smaller, even with the boom in homeschool, because you've got 30 or so kids. And there's teacher shortages all over. When I graduated from college in 2006, you couldn't get a teaching job. You were very lucky to get a teaching job. And now from what I hear, at least in upstate New York, there's a shortage. People just aren't, I don't know if they're not going to school for it or what, or if there was maybe the retirement boom, that I'm not sure. But the same with my government work. They can't find people. And it was the same thing, like to get into the state, it was like, oh, you have a state job. And, you know, and now it's like, yeah, we'll take you. Can you breathe? Come on over.
Yeah.
You got a job here.
It's totally true. They're doing, like, for here, they have an ABCT program where if you just have a bachelor's degree, they will pay for you to finish your schooling with them, and it's a shortened way. But it also means there's these teachers that are coming in that don't have teaching experience, and the thing that they're missing is like, they maybe have practical skills, but they don't have any classroom management skills that they've been taught or, you know, practice. Like, there's just a lot of different things, and, you know, the teacher, I don't know, just teaching in general, it pays so little, and there's a lot of reasons. Like, for me, why I quit teaching, one of the reasons was looking at the daycare prices, that I might be making maybe $100 a month, if that, after daycare costs. And for me, I'm like, I would much rather spend time with my kids and be present and not take home $100.
Exactly. So how do you manage doing the financial planning business with homeschooling your kids? Like, what does that look like in your day?
Well, it looks different every day. And I think that's one of the nice things about homeschooling is the flexibility. So it depends on when I'm working with clients that, so my husband and I have our business together. So we're financial coaches. And the nice thing is that when I am coaching with a client, he can be working with the kids in the house and vice versa. And we do have the support of my parents. They homeschool our kids every Thursday. And so all day they have them. And so that's typically the day where I try to schedule as many client sessions as I can and work on all the other things that I need to do for like social media posts and list for my email list and all kinds of different things like that. So I feel like it's just like I'll work in patches of just working with the kids in the mornings. And then in the afternoons, I have some time that I work. And it's just, it really depends on the day.
Now, your kids are a little younger. So what do you do with them when you are working, or you and your husband are working and they're not at their grandparents at that time?
They do a great job. Just like, they'll be playing with Legos, or they'll be doing, I'll even give them lists of, these are the things that you need to get done, like unloading the dishwasher, doing certain tasks. And then I just, when we're done, I just go and check on them. Most of our sessions are about an hour, so it's not like a huge amount of time, and they're in our home, and we've done a lot of training with them. And so I feel like if they are able to handle it really well. And so if that was not the case, we wouldn't be able to do exactly what we're doing right now.
Yeah, it is hard. And it depends on the kid too. Mm-hmm. My friend, she wants to homeschool so bad. She's got two boys that are extremely high energy, and she's probably listening right now, but but, you know, she's like, I want to homeschool, but like, I have to work from home and my husband works. And, you know, so she's like, I just don't know what to do with them all day. And the grandparents do help out. But I think the grandparents are also like, you should put them in school. Like, they need structure, mm-hmm. And so it is hard. A lot of parents are, especially when you didn't grow up in the homeschool world, are kind of on this balancing act. Like, I know what I want for my kids, I just don't know that they're teeter-tottering, that they can provide it. It's so hard. And you feel, even I'm in the same situation, to leave a pension and all that. It's like, I've been so brainwashed to think that I need that money when I retire. And in a way you do, but in another way, you're still not promised any money is going to be there, or that you're going to be here. At that time, all you know is you're here now and your kids need you now. So it's not easy.
Yeah, it's definitely a balancing act that you want to be prepared now, but you also want to be prepared for the future. And, you know, that's one of the things that I love with working with our clients, is helping them decrease their stress level. Because when you have less financial stress going on in your life, money touches every area of your life. So then everything else gets better. So you're able to parent more effectively. You're able to spend more time with your kids and not feeling that stress that I need to do X, Y, and Z, and have all these, you know, stressors that are going through your mind and just making it more of a challenge.
How have you changed your financial plans post-COVID?
Post-COVID, well,
like, maybe you, have you seen things that you're like, I better make other arrangements or other decisions for the future because things may be riskier?
Well, I do feel very blessed. One of the things that my husband and I did before COVID, we paid off our home in 2019. So we've been debt-free since then. And nice. I feel
congratulations.
Like, thanks. I feel like that really set us up to not be as stressed when COVID hit. It was, you know, like, no one could have planned that. And I just feel like it was such a blessing to have no house payment. We don't have any other things going on. And we were able to, like, my husband was able to quit his regular 9-to-5, and we had enough money to just start up our own business. And so we've been able to live into that more. And I feel like COVID has helped our business with being virtual. Like, we work with clients all across the country. And I feel like that is much more a normal thing now that, you know, COVID really brought in doing like Zoom calls and having, you know, one-on-one conversations with people virtually. And I feel like that has helped our business because that's what we do. And it's really nice for us because we don't have to have an office space. And we also notice that when people are talking about their financial position, it's scary and vulnerable. And if they're already in the comfort of their own home, it doesn't feel as scary. And it just feels like you can be honest and no one else is going to be hearing all the things.
Yeah.
Last night, we were reading The Miraculous Pencil, the second book in the Tuttle Twins series for ages 5-11. My son, even though he's only 4, was able to pick up on the concept that every product we have has been created by so many moving parts. Even a pencil, like the Miraculous Pencil, takes thousands of people to make, from the wood on the tree to the fuel that runs the equipment to cut down the trees to the ropes that secure the logs to the truck, the graphite from South Korea that's used for the lead, the yellow lacquer from the castor oil grown in India, and all the hands involved in between. The book focuses on the idea that with capitalism, we must keep the costs low and the quality good so that it sells and everyone can make money. Thinking about this greater concept of how things are made not only gives more appreciation to the items that we have, but it brings up conversation on what kinds of jobs are out there in the world and what new ones are waiting for our little learners to create. I love these books. We read them all the time. If you're interested in purchasing books from the Tuttle Twins, check out my link and use my code for 40% off products on ages 5 through 11. TuttleTwins.com/REF/CHERYL and use coupon code Cheryl40, that's CHERYL40, for 40% off all products for kids ages 5 through 11. You can grab the link and the code from my show's description.
So I feel like it has been, it's just been different, and seeing how much inflation has been changing things and how I feel like it hasn't affected us as much as it has our clients that we work with, and seeing that need. And like today, so we volunteer at our church, we have a food pantry, and I was there today, and just seeing the increased level of need, and I've been doing that through the whole COVID thing. So I've been able to see from that end of how many people are really needing food and needing extra things because it's just been rough. And now the thing I've been seeing lately is the COVID funding has stopped right. In the last couple of months. And so now like the food banks aren't getting extra money and people are not getting extra things that they were used to. And now it's feeling tighter for a lot of people. And so, definitely can feel that.
I don't know if this would have to do with your line of work, but at least in New York, and I'm willing to bet it's across the country, there's help wanted signs everywhere. So one, where are the people working? Are people just not willing to work anymore? And or the people that you say that there's an increase at the food pantries and stuff like that, are they people that cannot work or not making enough because whatever job they had just isn't, like the food prices have gone up so much? Like, do you know, have you kind of thought about that? Why there's so many help? Nobody can find workers. And right. But yet there is a need for, you know, more assistance. So what's going on in the world?
I don't know. I mean, I don't have the answer to that. And, you know, there's people that don't qualify for food stamps, but they still aren't able to fully feed their kids. And so I think there's a lot of just different people that are needing extra support. And it's amazing, like, how much food is wasted in grocery stores that they donate. Like, there's just, it's good that these people are coming and getting assistance, because if they don't go and get that assistance, like, there's just all this food that's just going to go to waste. So there's like that side of it as well.
So the grocery stores can donate to the food pantries?
Yes. So we do. Yeah.
I was under the impression that they used to be able to, and then had stopped. It might differ from state to state too.
It could.
It's really cool that you guys are kind of owning your own business now. Do you envision your girls kind of like, as they get older, you teaching them about financial responsibility? And do you think that that is talked about enough in middle school and high school at the public school setting?
I feel like it's really more on parents, and I do feel like we need to be talking to kids about money through their entire lives. I think it's kind of like having the sex talk with your kids that people a lot of times view you just do this once and you're good. And that's really not going to be very effective. And like for our kids, they, you know, with working with people on their finances, one of the things that you see is that we all have a financial story, and it's really, our view on money is based on what we saw growing up. Our parents' relationship with money. Those are the things that are unspoken that we bring into our, like when we get married and our regular lives. And it's not, we learn more from just absorbing those things than taking a financial class. I do feel like financial literacy would be amazing to have it taught in the schools, but it needs to also be taught in the home. And so, like, one of the things that we do with our kids is we really do teach them how to handle their finances early on. Like, even going to the grocery store, I walk them through what I am thinking in my mind when I go to the grocery store. I tell them, like, I am choosing this versus this because of, like, this price point, or, like, I actually like this even though it's more expensive than this brand. I like this and it doesn't have high fructose corn syrup or whatever. Like, going through and walking them through just day-to-day life. And, like, we have done a lot of different things with our kids to just help them learn the value of a dollar. Our daughter has had her own business for the past probably 2 years now. She'll just do, like, it's not us pushing it at all. And I think it's been really fun to just help her do this. And so she has her own website, and she was selling plants, and she, like, grew these little plant starts, and we also had mint that was overgrowing, so she was selling it, and she made her own little sales videos, and she had to call the different people that wanted to purchase and ask when can she deliver it. And so it was just all of these life skills that not many, like, 7-year-olds are going on the phone, talking to a complete stranger on the phone and having a conversation, and being able to walk her through, like, this is how you talk to a stranger on a phone. And so I feel like that has been a really positive thing. Another thing that we do is we have a list of all the, like, a checkoff thing for each week with their schooling, that this is what they need to get done. And when they get all of that done, we consider their schooling like a job. And so they get paid for that. And that money that they get can go towards educational things. Like, it could be educational toys like Legos or something like that. And so for our son, he really wanted to buy a Lego train set. And the train set he wanted was a $200 train set. And which is crazy, but we went.
Yeah. Why are Legos so expensive?
I know, right? It has, like, you can use your phone and be like this remote control, and it actually, like, goes around and all the things. And so we went through and we're like, okay, let's look at the calendar. How many weeks of schooling would it take for you to be able to afford this? And you also have to consider tax, and let's figure out how much taxes. Like, we live in Idaho and we have a 6% tax. So going through and figuring out, well, how, this is how much you need in tax. This is really how much this is going to cost. And he saved up, and it took a really long time, but he had that satisfaction. So the delayed gratification, which I think is so key in instilling it in our kids. And I would have never guessed, because he's much more of the spender versus our daughter. And so it's been really fun to be able to, you know, it's not like, oh, we're going to have finances be something that we, you know, like, it's an actual, like, subject area that we cover every single day. It's more like they absorb the things that you do and how you spend money and why you do things. And I think telling them your thought process, if it's a positive thought process, if it's not, just zip your lips. But
yeah, that's really cool. And that's probably more the unschooling process, because you're just letting them absorb that as you kind of live life. And my nephew and my niece and other nephew, they all have, like, vehicles. And I'm wondering, like, no one ever sat with me to say, this is how interest works. When you take out a loan,
yes,
like, it might be like 3% interest. Oh, okay, 3%. What's that? It's nothing. But when you compound it over 5 or 6, they're probably going out 7 years now for loans because no one can afford anything. So yeah, it's like, and they're getting us at an early age. He's 17. So he's, you know, got this loan now for this car that he thinks is, like, when he looks at the end and you see the amortization schedule, I don't know if I said that right.
Yeah.
You see how much you're just paying the bank. It's insanity. And yes, the conspiracy theory in me would say they are not teaching courses on this. I don't think they are. I didn't learn it, at least, on purpose, because they don't want us to know that that's what they're paying the bank. They want you to think 3% isn't a lot, or 2%, whatever it is. Or some of them are probably 6% now, but it is a lot because of how it compounds over the years. Same thing with credit cards, you know? Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a 1-year interest-free credit card. Okay, well, we're not really of a habit to read all the fine print. So if you don't pay that off in the 12 months, you are going to get the back interest from the entire year in a lot of cases. Yeah. Or, you know, it's a lot of this stuff I think is not told to us on purpose. And they want us to, you know, concentrate on other things that we never really end up using.
I think a lot of it has to do with people are not taught these things. And then when we get to a certain age, we feel like we should know this stuff so we don't talk about it. And money has really been a taboo subject for a really, really long time. And, yeah. I see firsthand all of these, you know, our clients, where they're at financially. And it's scary. Like, we have, you know, people that have their credit card is a 31% interest rate. And that kind of interest rate is just incredibly hard to catch up. And
that interest rate is given to people with poor credit. So it's like you're just beating them down when they're already down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely something that is a huge issue. And it's causing so many people stress. And a lot of people, you know, like going back to even like student loan debt and seeing people that are getting close to retirement still owing, you know, $50,000, $80,000 in student loan debt at that point. And it's really an issue for sure. And I think a lot of it is there, if kids are not taught early on what it looks like to have a student loan, because I think so many people get student loans thinking it's almost like a grant, like this is just free money, and they'll go and use it on all kinds of things that they will regret in the in the future. And so I think having a solid foundation for kids to really know what compound interest looks like and how it can work for you and how it can work against you. And yeah, I feel like that would be amazing. And there are some states that are being proactive and making sure that every high school senior gets at least like one credit worth of financial literacy. But a lot of it is like, it needs to be happening in the homes as well. And I feel like, you know, there's just so many people that they're just overwhelmed and they don't even know where to start with their finances. And that's really where we come in, is they're kind of frozen and they don't know what to do and they're stressed. And they just feel like, if I just keep putting this in the back burner, then hopefully it'll get better. But it doesn't. It just gets worse.
Yeah. And I agree, you know, a lot of things need to be taught at home, like the gardening and how to cook and that sort of stuff. But if the parents don't know how to do it and they weren't taught, and you work the 9 to 5 and the sports and this and that, you have no time to teach yourself, let alone teach your kids. So it is it's fighting an uphill battle for sure. Mm-hmm. So where can people find you if they want to get more financial literacy themselves?
Yeah. So we have our website is richlivingcoaching.com. So my last name is Rich. So my husband and I are Mr. and Mrs. Rich, which is pretty funny. God has a sense of humor that we help people with money and our last name is Rich. And so we do free calls with people, and it's a 20-minute call. And really we just go and help them and point them in the right direction of maybe getting coached by us or giving them a free resource and really helping them figure out what the next step is. So if anyone's interested in that, you can just go to richlivingcoaching.com/meet. And then we're on social media as well, on pretty much all the platforms under Rich Living Coaching.
Yeah. I mean, I think even for myself, I'd love to talk to you, because I keep saying to my husband, you know, he's working in the HVAC industry, commercial HVAC, and I'm like, quit and start your own business. I can, you know, take on handling the scheduling of the things, and you have people that would come work with you and this and that. And he's like, you complain I'm never home now, you're never going to see me then. But I can see that as being like a really good experience for my kids as part of the homeschooling. And then having, like, he has a 401k, but I'm worried that money won't even be there when he wants to retire. And it's like having a business, you have something that you can pass on to your children or sell and have a retirement. But he's just not there yet, but that is okay. But I mean, should we fear not having 401ks or pensions?
I feel like we should be worried about Social Security, of what that will look like. I personally, I'm not banking on it. I can't tell what the future is going to look like, but I do feel like if you want to retire, you need to set aside money and do that. So I would recommend doing a Roth IRA if you income qualify. And there's just a lot of different things that you can do to really set yourself up. And Okay. That would really make a big difference. And so if you look at historically, 401ks have done well, depending on like what the investments are in. But historically, mm-hmm. the stock market has done well. We can't ever tell the future, so there are some risks in everything. But putting your money just in the bank account where it's getting no interest, it's really technically losing, especially with how inflation is going these days. Yeah, and I think one of the things that we do with our clients is really give them a very clear view of what their financial situation is right now. Normally, money is in all these different places, and when it's like that, it becomes confusing, and most people are more stressed because they just don't know. And when you actually just put all the cards on the table and you see, okay, this is exactly how much money we have. And a lot of people, they'll have quite a bit of savings, but they don't have any rhyme or reason for it. It's not labeled. They don't know what it's for, and it's not working for them. And that's mm-hmm. not giving them some confidence. And it also, if you don't have a real good sense of what that money is for, it makes it more stressful because you don't know when to tap into it, and you don't really know what is this earmarked for. And so getting clarity is what we do. We help people simplify and automate their money so they don't have to have all of this brain space being used to try to figure out where things are and being stressed about all those little things.
Yeah, that's so us too, because I mean, we have our finances separate because I'm of the mindset, like, I don't believe in a savings account. Like, I just live for today. And I have a pension, and I can always go back to work later if I don't return to my government work right now after my maternity leave is up. But I can always go back later. But I'm like, yeah, I'm going to have the pension. Let's just live at an even zero right now. When I get a paycheck, I'm just going to spend it. My husband is so opposite. He's such a saver. And I'm like, why aren't we using the money for this? Why aren't we using the money for that? And he's like, 'cause I never know when I'm going to need it. And I'm like, well, no, but you need it now. Like the kitchen, we just pay off the kitchen. Then we don't have the second mm-hmm. mortgage. But yeah, I definitely do need to sit down and talk with you and have him there. And
yeah, that would be beneficial to us. And that's the thing too, is when you get married, you have two different views, and a lot of times they don't align perfectly. It's not like normally you marry someone who's different than you, and you have a different financial, like you absorb different things from your parents and he absorbs different things from his parents. And then those two collide, and it's hard to forge, like, what are you supposed to do? And a lot of people, one person does most of the finances, and the other person is kind of in the dark, is what we see typically with a lot of our clients. And what we really love doing is bringing unity, because when you start being on the same page and viewing it as a team, that you're able to reach financial goals like so much faster. For my husband and I, we realized like we didn't have it as a huge goal to pay off our house. But once we started dreaming up what our ideal life looked like, we realized, okay, what are we needing to do to get there? And so we reverse engineered, and we realized like if we didn't have a mortgage, if we didn't have any debt, if we were able to have our own business where we don't have to go to regular 9-to-5 and we have flexibility that we can travel, we can do different things that we want to do. Like, wouldn't that be amazing? And then we're like, well, how do we do this? And a lot of it was like, well, you have a 9-to-5 where we can't do all this travel, and we do have a mortgage. Like if we want to travel and we have a paid off house, then it's not like we have to pay off pay the mortgage, but we also are paying for travel. So it really just gave us the incentive of like, we can actually do this. And then we set up a timeline, and we had people join us, and it was amazing. We created the debt dump challenge, and so we just had invited people to come take a dump with us, a debt dump, and it was super fun. We had over 60 families across the country join us, and overall people paid, I think it was over $500,000 in debt in a year. And we did different coaching on every month. And that was really the first time we realized like we could really do financial coaching together as a job. Like it was super fun, and we were able to help all of these families. And so that was kind of like the birth of our business while we were also working on our biggest financial feat we've done so far.
That is so cool. I'm so glad that you came on today. I am totally going to be in touch with you to talk about this for myself. And send me your link, because I will put all the links to where people can contact you in the show's description. So listeners, don't feel that you had to write that down. Just pop over to the show's description and you can find Amber Lee Rich there.
That's great. Thanks.
Thank you so much for being on today.
I'm so glad I was able to meet you and connect.
Yes, definitely. All right. Thank you so much, Amber Lee. Have a great night.
You too.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of The Homeschool How-To. If you've enjoyed what you heard and you'd like to contribute to the show, please consider leaving a small tip using the link in my show's description. Or if you'd rather, please use the link in the description to share this podcast with a friend or on your favorite homeschool group Facebook page. Any effort to help us keep the podcast going is greatly appreciated. Thank you for tuning in and for your love of the next generation.